Hi, I'm Jonathan Hall, host of Sustainable Futures, Kantar's regular look at the intersection between brands, consumers, and sustainability. I want to help you to get your brand ready for the future, understand where you can make an impact, and make a smarter business case for products and services that are better for people, the planet, and for business. Sustainable Futures will showcase what great sustainable marketing looks like and the issues that matter to consumers across the globe. Subscribe to Sustainable Futures from Kantar, wherever you get your podcasts.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
You know, I've been talking about earned media value for quite some time on this podcast. My friends at Eisenberg have just raised the bar on earned media benchmarks with their Social Index. Social Index now gives you globally earned media values across a growing list of 6 geographies for all your KPIs across the top 7 social platforms: Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Snapchat, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube. You can now visualize these values for deeper analysis, and they have a look-back window over 2 years of historical comparisons. Social Index is updated daily. Don't get stuck with old data. Over 1,000 companies have used the Social Index to understand the ROI of their social campaigns. And if you work with a social agency, you should demand they incorporate earned media values into your reports. Get your earned media value for social content. Visit earnedmediavalues.com/Allen. Again, that's earnedmediavalues.com/ALAN.
For all of us, it's about predicting where the consumer is going and getting half of it right.
One of the things we want to do is create ads that don't suck.
Embracing change creates great possibility.
I'm Alan Hart, and this is Marketing Today.
On today's show, I've got Mike Sanders. He's the Chief Marketing Officer of Kaseya. Kaseya is a leading provider of unified IT management and security software for managed service providers and small to medium-sized businesses. On the show today, we talk about Mike's path, how he, as an entrepreneur, ended up as a CMO, and what that journey was like. We also talk about Kaseya, the business, how they go to market. And we spend quite a bit of time talking about their stadium rights deal in Miami for the Kaseya Center. This was not your normal stadium rights deal. It came on the heels of crypto company FTX's demise, the pullout from that process, both from the team and the county and state's perspective, and how Kaseya jumped on that opportunity, figured out how it would work and how it uniquely would work for them in this specific instance as they tried to grow their presence in Miami, and how he's going to leverage this going forward, how it fits into his overall marketing strategy. So I know you're going to enjoy this conversation with Mike Sanders. Well, Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I hear you are an avid fisherman, and I'm curious, I'm always curious, you know, what keeps people coming back to their hobbies, but what keeps you coming back to fishing?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a couple things. I mean, the first thing for me is it's a great way to kind of clear my mind. I like either sports or hobbies where you can't really think about anything else while you're doing them. So one of the things I do, and I'm not great at it, unfortunately, but one of the things that I do quite a bit of is free diving. And oh, wow. It's one of those things that you can't really do it and think about other things. So it's just a great way on a weekend to get out there and reset and kind of be able to clear my mind and spend some time, you know, just a little bit disconnected, which is nice. But during COVID, I started doing more of it with my family because it was one of the few things that you could do where you're, you know, socially distant still. And, right. And they fell in love with it. And so now I've got a whole family that loves to fish. And so, you know, going out and spending time with the family and having a hobby that my wife and son love is just awesome. So not much better than that.
No, that's awesome. free diving, is that with like a spear? Like what?
Yeah, we do. We don't use guns. We don't use spear guns. We use we use essentially what either a pole spear or a Hawaiian sling, which is like a bow and arrow underwater. Mm. A lot of the trips that we do are in the Bahamas, and it's illegal to use like a full spear gun there.
Yeah.
Or tanks. So you have to hold your breath and you have to use something that is, you know, not powered by essentially a trigger that doesn't have a trigger. So it's, but like I said, not great at it. Wish I was better at it, but it's a heck of a lot of fun.
Well, when you said fishing, when we earlier talked, I was thinking rod and reel, you know, like I wasn't thinking holding your breath and like trying to spear something under the water. That's a whole nother level of fishing I was not aware of. That's amazing. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, we do both, but I think, you know, it's for me, the one that keeps me coming back is definitely the free diving. I think it's just one of those things. It's it's a fun challenge, and it's just something that I don't think you ever perfect. So that's always fun too.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a workout too, which is nice. Get a little exercise too.
Yeah, it's definitely good exercise.
Well, I don't know exactly how I'm going to transition, but we transitioned from spear fishing to spearing that target market as a marketer. Where did you get started, and how did you end up being the CMO at Kaseya?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I have a really, I guess, I think it's a weird background, but who knows? I started off as the head of IT for a public brokerage firm early on, and even before that, doing some different Linux admin stuff and things like that. But as my career progressed, I ended up starting my own business, and I've done that a few times in my career. And through that process, you really have to do everything. If you're a self-funded, you know, startup like I was, you have to do everything,
right?
And so, you know, the sales side, the marketing side, those things I think came more naturally to me, even though I was a developer towards kind of the end of the beginning of my career. Those were the parts that I loved. So I had a company that essentially did web application development, and I'd go out and I'd market it and go out on site and sell it. And I'd have this like crushing reality that I was going to have to go build all the stuff I just sold. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to start focusing on the first part of this, because the second part of it isn't bringing me a lot of joy. And that's when I started to really look at sales and marketing more in my career. So I started off at Kaseya in sales. I was here for 10 years initially. Okay. We actually got bought by private equity at the end of that. And I left to kind of go start my own thing again. Mm. And I got acquired again. By Kaseya. So I think I'm the only one that's been acquired twice here, and ended up right back at Kaseya. And through that kind of process, I launched Unitrends MSP for Kaseya, which was a tremendous amount of fun. I ended up running the Unitrends business here. And through that, I started to get back involved very heavily on the product marketing side and the marketing side and the sales side. And so that drove a lot of that for me and eventually landed me where I am now as the chief marketing officer. So it's definitely not the normal route, I would think, but I don't know that anybody has a truly normal route.
No, there's definitely no normal route, especially for CMOs in particular. I think it's a unique job in and of itself in particular. But and if I had known that they had acquired your company, maybe you're the fish being speared in that analogy.
maybe.
So, but well, that's awesome. I mean, it's a really cool background. And I mean, entrepreneur, I'm also an entrepreneur. I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, I mean, you take the trash out and you're trying to get that loan to bridge you to the next receivable coming in, all of the things in between. Well, tell us a little bit about like what does Kaseya do, and like who do you guys serve? Just help us understand that a little bit.
Yeah, Kaseya we're the market leader in IT and security management software, and we really focus in on solutions for multifunction IT professionals. So, what does that look like? Well, it really looks like either managed service providers that service the S in the SMB market that don't have internal IT, or you know, that mid-market enterprise space, which is going to be a little bit upmarket from that's going to have internal IT but that doesn't want to, you know, outsource that, or maybe only does co-managed in the parts that they want to manage themselves. They might look to us for solutions.
Gotcha. Okay. So you're serving the service providers that are serving the SMB market and maybe targeting more of the small side of the SMB market.
Yeah. And the reason we call out the multifunction IT professional in particular is because the S and the SMB and mm-hmm. the managed service providers and the mid-market enterprise guys, they're not like Citibank. They don't have hundreds of people doing network monitoring or thousands of people doing just network monitoring. They have 5 people, 10 people doing everything. They may have some specialization, but it's pretty rare.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. Critical, if you are one of those multifunction IT pros and you've got to like switch between fixing something and monitoring what's going on the systems here.
100%. And it's an under-focused market. When people build software companies, they really tend to, for this type of software, for IT and security management, they typically focus on the enterprise side.
Right.
And that's where a lot of this stuff, kind of the genesis for a lot of these products is. And so there's been over the years, kind of not a lot of companies that have focused really on this particular market, and certainly not on this particular market in the breadth that we cover it. And so for us, it's been really a great place to be and a great market to serve, because we think it's wildly underserved. And it's, you know, why we've put so much focus and attention on it.
Awesome. Well, so you're the CMO. What does the role of the CMO look like at Kaseya? We just talked about there's no traditional background, if you will, no one background. So I'm curious what the role looks like.
Yeah, I don't know how it compares to kind of the normal, whatever the norm would be, or whatever some of the norms, let's say, might be for the CMO role. But for me, my responsibilities are pretty broad. It's you know, everything from demand gen to having the product marketing team, customer marketing. But I also have the strategic accounts team globally. We have the specialist team, which is our overlay team, which helps our account managers work through selling new products into existing customers, and also new customer acquisition globally. So I have kind of both sides of it, you know, either the demand gen side and the NCA side, and the customer marketing and the strategic teams and the specialists that service that market. And so as a result, you know, it kind of balances out, kind of makes sure that it's that I'm keeping myself honest, as it were.
Yeah. There's no sales team throwing it over the wall or vice versa. You are the bridge physically and literally, I guess.
And it's been, I love it because I get that direct feedback. I see mm-hmm. what's working. I see what's not working. And I can't, you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, marketing can't win without sales and, you know, vice versa and everything else. But I truly can't win without the other. So you know, my success here is predicated on that. And I think it's awesome. I think it's something that I don't know if I'd want it any other way, simply because I think it gives us the ability as a team to really be honest with each other and to work through these issues without anybody being able to win if the other one loses.
I love it. Well, how does, as we talk about marketing, the role and your span, how do you guys go to market? Like, how do you actually sell into the market today?
Yeah, so a couple different ways. We sell directly to managed service providers who then go and sell in, you know, sell a service typically, almost always, that they deliver using our solutions. If we're selling into mid-market enterprises, which are going to be slightly above the market that is serviced by managed service providers, then, you know, we also do a new customer acquisition motion there as well. So we drive a lot of digital demand gen, and it's all inbound. We do very little, if any, outbound. But that part of the motion is kind of the, you know, that gets us logos, and it's certainly a very important part of our go-to-market strategy, but nothing for us is more important than the existing customer base and our ability to really kind of bring a platform to them. So we have a platform that we call IT Complete, and that platform is kind of what I was alluding to before. It's a platform that's designed for multifunction IT professionals. And what it does is it brings pretty much everything that multifunction IT professional needs to do into a platform that is fully integrated. So, simple example: I'm going to go remote control a machine as a, you know, as an IT guy. Mm-hmm. And when I go to remote control that machine, I have a password manager that I'm using. well, my remote control system automatically ties in with it and it's automatically going to log me into that machine without me having to go and copy and paste the password and the username into it. And then all the documentation in my IT documentation solution is going to be available to me as an overlay while I'm on that asset. And then if I want to do like a backup recovery, I can do it right from that screen as well. So all of these things are integrated in a way that makes it so that these multifunction IT professionals that typically are living across, you know, 17 different products, they don't have to have 17 different products open and switch between every single one of them. We bring that functionality to them in the form of these workflow integrations that we have across the platform. So as a result of that, and because we have such a broad portfolio in there across, you know, IT Complete, our existing customer base is a place where we can do a tremendous amount of marketing. Right. And we do a tremendous amount of business there because we are a multi-product company. So it is, you know, it is a I think different from what most companies, certainly any company I've ever worked with, has done. But it's been awesome, and it resonates in a huge way with our target audience.
Yeah, I mean, just the time savings alone is dramatic. When you're talking about, I mean, I've been on those the receiving end of remoting in, and then you're waiting for somebody to do something because they're, you know, behind the scenes, they're doing like three or four different systems and steps and screens. And that sounds like an amazing offering, not only for the people that are doing the work, but for the recipient on the other end that's getting the machine fixed or getting a system back up and running.
Yeah. And it's definitely something that I think, you know, the technical integrations are great. The commercial integration of it. Imagine that you have to go change your credit card as a service provider and you have to contact 17 different vendors.
Right.
To do it. Yeah. Like, what a pain, right? So having one place to go and do all of these things commercially, add new licenses, talk to an account manager, no matter what your problem is, have one place for support, all these things have really resonated in that marketplace for us. So, you know, while we don't go to market from a digital demand gen with that message, because we figure if somebody's in the market for a particular solution, our solution needs to stand on its own. And we don't want to try and create additional pain that they have to go and think about before they make a decision. But once they're into, you know, inside our ecosystem, it makes a lot of sense for them to adopt everything we have.
Love it. And cool. Well, so we talked a little bit about like how you guys go to market, direct sales, your inbound program, as well as you kind of move to the mid-market level where that's not, it's a different market for you guys. I mean, we got connected in part because of the stadium rights deal that you did in Miami with the Kaseya Center, which is probably been burned on the mind of anyone watching the NBA playoffs.
And, we hope so.
So how do you go? I mean, how did that come about? Let's just start from the beginning. Like, where did that even come from?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a funny story because it was really myself and Luis Quintas who runs a significant portion of our go to market here at Kaseya. We're both crypto nerds, and you know, we were talking to each other about it, and actually talking to each other on my drive into work with earlier this year. And he was taking me through the story of FTX and, you know, everything that transpired there and how that whole thing went down. And every day, like more of the mystery would unfold. And so every morning we were having these conversations as I was driving in, and you know, all of a sudden it just dawned on me. I'm like, man, they're going to disappear. Like this is bad. Like there's no recovering from this. I was like, I wonder what they're going to do about this, you know, about the stadium. Like what are they going to do with the naming rights?
Right.
I was like, well, we have to get it. Like we have to do this. So I went into the office and I spoke to a few different people about it here. And I think for us, it's not something that we had ever really considered before. And I don't think if it wasn't this situation that we would have considered it at any point in time, maybe.
Right.
Because we're not focused on enterprise. Yeah. And we're not a local business that could benefit from the brand recognition locally. Right. Mm-hmm. If we sell more into Miami, hey, that's great. That's awesome. But that's not like, that's a small segment of our overall marketplace. And so the reason, you know, there were a couple reasons that drove it for us. I think initially the big reason is, in Miami, we're looking at growing quite a bit. It's our largest center of excellence in the world. And, you know, we are hiring over 3,000 people here in Miami, and we already have, you know, 1,000 odd here today. Yeah. So it's, for us, it's a huge draw to be on the arena.
Right.
Because instantly, you know, we saw a huge uptick in the number of people that were reaching out to kind of get jobs here. You know, our applications went through the roof. The quality of the applicants went up. I had people coming to me that I've been friends with forever who had known that I worked here forever. And they were like, man, I want to come work with you guys. And I was like, really? You want to come work here? Because we had a great relationship and you knew everything about it. No, we got the, you know, the naming rights. And all of a sudden we were a real company overnight. And I think that's the big thing, right? People want to work for a company that they've heard of, or that their family's heard of, or that their friends have heard of. Like, there's a certain kind of pride in that.
Yeah.
And I think for us, we were probably one of the biggest tech companies, if not the biggest tech company in Miami already. But because we're B2B, if you're not in the space that we're in, nobody really knew who we were.
Right.
And so I think that was, you know, that was the big thing. It just became, it made us real kind of overnight. And that has been, you know, incredible. And like I said, I think for, you know, for us, we have hard metrics on it. We had like I think it was 64% more applicants for every job that we had coming in after. And it wasn't just in Miami. It was actually global. I talked to people in Australia that had mentioned it, especially during the finals.
Right.
I know that, you know, we've had people in different countries that have come to us, because basketball is a pretty international sport. So it's definitely something that, you know, again, from that side has driven exactly what we wanted, which is great. But there's so much more that, you know, that we want to do with it.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Hall, host of Sustainable Futures, Kantar's regular look at the intersection between brands, consumers, and sustainability. I want to help you to get your brand ready for the future, understand where you can make an impact, and make a smarter business case for products and services that are better for people, the planet, and for business. Sustainable Futures will showcase what great sustainable marketing looks like and the issues that matter to consumers across the globe. Subscribe to Sustainable Futures from Kantar, wherever you get your podcasts.
Time.
No, that's amazing. I mean, and the fact that it's kind of magical timing, right? Like, you needed to grow your operations there locally. You needed to probably like boost your legitimacy and you know, like presence in the local market to do that effectively. And then here comes a failing crypto company.
What are the chances?
Yeah, I know. Kudos. I mean, just kudos for jumping on it. You know, like I would imagine a number of people that I talk to would say, in your same situation, would be like, ah, it's going to be too hard. You know, like, you guys went for it. I love that. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, we're super fortunate that we have an awesome team. And I say this with all the humility in the world, because I had so little to do with making it happen, which was amazing. And I mean that literally. I mean, the team, I can take absolutely no credit for the hard work that was required. Mm-hmm. All I had was, you know, it'd be really cool. And then the team, you know, took it from there. And it was, you know, it was incredible to see what they were able to get done and how fast they were able to execute on it. I know the city and the different groups, the county, you know, they were really surprised at the speed at which we were able to get things done. But you're absolutely right. If it happens a year before, we probably don't do it.
Right.
If it happens in a city a few miles further away, mm-hmm. we don't do it. I mean, there's so many things that came together. The timing was just, you know, it was just serendipitous for us.
I love the results that you guys have seen already. What are you thinking about, like, how to take it forward, and what comes next after this initial splash, if you will?
Yeah, I think for us, you know, the big thing is we want to do a couple different things with it that I think are really, one's very tactical and one's very strategic for us. The tactical one is really simple. If we are the ones utilizing the arena and the access that we get through the deal, then that's not ideal. We want our clients to utilize it. We've already got clients using it, which is great. If we have a a service provider that's trying to wow a client, or they're trying to acquire another service provider, or one of our mid-market enterprise customers that is coming to us and saying, hey, you know, we've got an acquisition or whatever, and we'd really love to bring somebody to a game or kind of take advantage of the facilities to do an event, things like that. You know, that's a big portion of what we're doing. And we do a lot of what we call executive briefings here in Miami. And if people come here for the executive briefing, you know, if we have an opportunity to take them to a game, especially if, you know, if Dallas is here playing and we can bring a partner from Dallas
right
to the, you know, to our offices here, do an EBC, do an executive briefing, and really build that relationship with the customer, and then have them go to the event afterwards and see their team play in a, you know, in an experience that maybe they wouldn't be able to get access to normally, or wouldn't want to get, you know, wouldn't be willing to spend what it costs to get, you know, floor seats or something like that.
Right.
That's really a cool thing that we have. And we're leveraging that again, you know, for ourselves, but also for letting our partners leverage it for themselves. So from a really tactical perspective, that's a big part of it. Mm. I think the other kind of two parts of it, the strategic part of it, comes in two flavors. One is, you know, there's a huge portion of this, like $83 million that goes back to programs for, you know, against gun violence and really giving better opportunities to the community. And for us, Miami is, you know, it's our home and it's our largest center of excellence. And we have a lot of people who move here. We have a lot of people that we hire that are from here. And the healthier our community is, the easier that is. It's tough to get somebody to move to a community if that community's got a ton of violence or a ton of issues. Mm-hmm. And so from a purely kind of selfish perspective, we want to do what we can to help the community, but it's also to give back. I mean, this community's done so much for us. We've built such an awesome kind of center of excellence here. We've gotten so much talent from the local city that for us, you know, if we could do things that really kind of drive that forward, that's great. That's a huge upside for us.
Love that.
The final thing, and this is going to be trickiest, I think, but also probably the most important, is for us to get real business value out of it long term. We really want to make sure that we are able to kind of drive awareness to the MSP community overall. Mm. And for us to do that, we've got a program that we call Powered by Kaseya. You got to think about it like Intel Inside. So back in the day when you know, people were looking at computers, the concept of what a good, you know, processor for the computer was, people didn't have that level of, the general consumer didn't have that level of knowledge.
Right.
And Intel, I think, did a freaking amazing job of making it so that you might not know any of the reasons why, but you wanted an Intel processor.
Right.
And they did that through that Intel Inside program. And for us, we would love to get Powered by Kaseya to be similar to that, but for our service providers, much like Intel Inside drove adoption for the PC manufacturers that partnered with them, we want to be able to give our partners the ability to leverage the Kaseya brand recognition in what they're doing. And so that's a huge initiative for us, and one that I think is going to take a little bit of time for that to kind of build out, although we're starting to see more and more of it. And again, the extra exposure we got from the finals run, I think, certainly helped there. But we're really working through what that program will look like over the next 5 years. And we're already getting clients that are reaching out to us saying, hey, I want to utilize the Powered by Kaseya branding already, because we want to kind of tie ourselves to that and make sure that we're able to leverage that brand recognition in the services that we're utilizing the solutions to deliver.
I really like that approach. I mean, we talk about in the B2B space in particular. I mean, you guys are serving other businesses first and foremost, and obviously then they serve their businesses, their clients,
right,
from there. But like, I've always thought, like, the notion of making sure that you're tied tightly to who you're serving and understanding the value that you deliver, there's no better way than tying your names together to say, we are joint, our joint value proposition is better together.
Absolutely.
That's pretty powerful. And it has to build some pretty meaningful relationships from that point forward.
So
it's amazing. Kudos. I mean, I hope it's really successful. I know you're just getting started, but like, it sounds like a great idea, a great strategy.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly one that we're excited about, and it's, you know, it's one that we're going to have to make sure that we stick the landing on, and
yeah,
and that's what we're focused on.
Well, if you can stick the landing on a stadium rights deal as something is unraveling at the same time, this one might be a little easier. It might take longer, but I think it's in sight.
So. I'd agree with that for sure.
That's pretty awesome. Well, it's good to get to know you and like what you're doing at Kaseya and what the company's up to. I'd love to get to know you a little bit better. We know you like fishing. And when I say fishing, now my definition has completely broadened. But one of my favorite questions to ask everyone that comes on is, has there been an experience of your past that defines or makes up who you are today?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably a few different things that come to mind. I'm sure everybody has like a few kind of things mm-hmm. that are defining for them. You know, I think for me, I've got kind of a weird backstory because, you know, I moved out of away from home early in my life, and I was working, going to school, going to university at night. And eventually through that process, about 3 years into university, I decided to drop out and start my own business. Mm. And I think that when I look back at it, I was a terrible student, like terrible. And I was. Went to 5 high schools and we never moved. So that gives you an idea. And so I think, you know, that background and that kind of backstory made it so that I always felt like I had to succeed. I didn't have an option. Yeah. Essentially, the way I looked at it is nobody's going to hire me, so I got to make this thing work. Mm. And you know, that was, I think, a huge motivator for me throughout the early part of my career. And I think it drove me to take a lot more kind of risks and chances in my career than maybe some people would.
No, I love that. And I mean, but if you look back on it, I mean, you've accomplished a ton. I mean, and I can only imagine that, like, having seen that success, knowing your background, like, you can do anything at that point, right? Like, pretty much you could do anything, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, it's I think your risk tolerance is different at yeah. that point, because you're kind of yeah. like, well, it's already better than I thought it would be. So, hey, why not go for it, you know? And I think that's something that has really helped me kind of try and go do things that are maybe not as safe. And I mean that in the sense of not just my career, but also the things that I do in my career. I'm willing to take chances. I'm willing to, you know, come in and be like, hey, we should go get stadium rights. You know? Right. Like, why not? Like, what's yeah. the worst thing that can happen? Kind of a mentality. And so I think that's something, but it also puts a chip on your shoulder, right? Like, you yeah. kind of want to make sure that you're always trying to strive for excellence, because you don't ever want somebody, you know, certainly earlier in my career, it's certainly less of a thing for me in the last 10 years, but certainly when I was in my early to mid 20s, I didn't want to be outed as you know, the guy who couldn't cut it, couldn't hack it. So I was always, you know, very motivated to excel.
Love it. Well, if you were starting this journey all over again, what advice would you give your younger self?
maybe be less of a pain in the rear end of my parents, and maybe not take high school certainly as unseriously as I did. No, I think from a business perspective, one of the things that I've discovered throughout my career, or certainly later kind of in more recent time in my career, is the difference between the things that we think we want versus the things that we actually want, and our willingness to commit to them and do things for them. And I think that if I look back at my earlier life, I think a lot of people think that they want something, but they don't actually want it. They don't want it badly enough to make the sacrifices required to make it happen. Mm. And I think that that's an important lesson. Like, don't kid yourself. Figure out what you want and then put everything into it. Because you may say you want to be in great shape, but if you're not in the gym every day, not that I'm in great shape, but I think I want to be in great shape, but I clearly don't, because if not, I would be in the gym every morning, you know? So it's right. It's one of those things where I think, you know, you gotta decide in life the things that you're serious about and put all of your attention and effort into them.
Yeah. I really like that notion. I mean, what people think about, we always think about what we want, but we don't think about the work that you have to do to get it. Right.
Yep. Yeah.
I love that. Well, is there a topic you think marketers need to be learning more about, or maybe something you're learning more about yourself these days?
Yeah, I think, and I hate saying this because it's so cliche and it's so bad. And then it is just like, I'll give a little context to it, but I think AI is really incredible where it's coming to. I think it's something that is finally real and is going to change things. Mm. And I think that what we've seen already inside our marketing group in particular, with the use of AI and the things that we've utilized it for, have really helped us gain a competitive edge. We are significantly faster and more, I think, accurate in the stuff we're creating as a result of our adoption of AI. And it was a challenge that we posed to the group earlier this year. And I think they've done an incredible job of rising to the challenge and using it for a lot of different things that are tangible. So, I think when it comes to certain types of content creation and things like that, there's a tremendous amount of value if you use it correctly. I think if it's used improperly, it's a joke and it doesn't work. And we've done a lot of work around kind of honing our skills. And I think it's just like programming or anything else. You have to really understand how to utilize the technology. Mm-hmm. But as we've gotten better and better with it, it's become more and more relevant in our day-to-day stuff. So we've been absolutely blown away by what it's helped us do and kind of the scale it's given us for that particular department. And we have other groups of the company using it as well, but that's not my area. So I haven't been directly involved in those, but certainly in the stuff that we've been able to do from a digital demand gen and from a product marketing side, it's been really eye-opening.
Yeah. No, I mean, the use cases for it just keep expanding. It feels like even the little bit that I've dabbled in it. And the craziest thing, I have a colleague I work with, and he's Dutch, and so his family still lives there. And he was trying to help them figure out how to move. And he had created, like, I don't know how many ChatGPT prompts to, like, find the closest and highest rated movers that are willing to go from point A to point B. And then on and on and on and on. Basically, I was like, you just emulated yourself and the work that you would normally have to do using ChatGPT. And he's like, yeah, because it's easy. And I was like, okay. It's like going from Google search, you know, just typing in what you want, to using all the Boolean, you know, language and parameters and all that stuff.
I think that's going to be incredibly disruptive. I mean, I think you hit that. Like, that's one of the things that I look at is what's going to happen to search.
Right.
I have a ton of people that I know, and I'll include myself in this, although the fact that it's limited on the time frame currently is how current the data is. But I'd rather ChatGPT something, for instance, than Google it.
Yeah.
Why? Because I can iterate and I can tweak it and I can get thoughts. You know, I can get like an actual, I don't just get a list, I get the actual time spent behind it. Is it perfect? No. But it's getting there. It's definitely, you know, it's definitely moving in that direction. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what that does to search overall and how marketing groups like, you know, our digital demand group and our product marketing team, how they're going to adjust for that. We're already working through that and saying, okay, well, if a large percentage of people are going to start using something like ChatGPT or ChatGPT itself to do these searches, how do we make sure we show up? How do we make sure that we show up in a way that we want to? How do we ensure that we, you know, are dominant in that new technology the way that I think we're dominant in the current PPC world? You know, for us, that's going to be a critical step.
A little bit. A lot to figure out. Next question. I have two questions for you left. Are there any trends or subcultures that you follow or you think other people should take notice of?
Yeah. I mean, I think the big one that's coming now on the trend side is, you know, I think we're seeing an economic shift. Right. And we're certainly, as an economy, already seeing some of those headwinds. We're fortunately a little bit isolated from it because the nature of our business and the nature of software and automation and IT and kind of the value that it provides, and really the fact that it's, you know, helping companies be more cost effective,
right,
kind of lends itself to either, you know, a boom or a bust. But I think that depending on what your company does, I think depending on certainly our companies, the companies that we service, whether it's somebody in the mid-market segment or one of our service providers, like, they need to be aware that the economy, you know, is going to change, and they need to be adjusting for it. There's a trend that they need to be following and need to be, you know, adapting to. But the same thing happened with COVID, right?
Yep.
Some companies didn't adjust and a lot of those suffered. Some companies adjusted their positioning, messaging, and everything else to match what the new paradigm of what their end users cared about was, and they did well.
I love it. Yeah, I mean, it's you've got to definitely be nimble, and I do envy software providers in times like this, because especially ones like you're focused on efficiency and reducing costs to begin with. You guys, I think it was not to name another software company, but I think it was Red Hat that I followed for a long time through their boom, and felt like they were like booming in every reverse cycle,
mm-hmm.
as people switched to Linux or Linux related services on their systems. So it was phenomenal.
Absolutely. Well,
last question for you. What do you think is the largest opportunity or threat facing marketers today?
I mean, I think what we just talked about is probably a big part mm-hmm. of it. I think, you know, the shifting landscape of AI is one side of it, and whether, you know, people get that right as that becomes potentially the new, even if it's inside Google or inside, mm-hmm. you know, Bing or inside whatever, it doesn't matter. You're going to have to learn a new way to market that works inside that paradigm. But I think in the nearer term, over the next period of time here, there's an opportunity or a threat depending on how people handle this shift in the way the economy is going.
Right.
I think that companies, for our companies, because we help them be more efficient and because we help them lower their labor costs, which is, you know, their highest cost bar none. And we actually help them because of the platform that we have. We help them drive the hard costs of their software down as well, because we don't have to make as, you know, much margin as we possibly can on one solution, because we know that our customers, once they come in, they end up adopting a bunch of stuff. So we're able to lower their hard costs for the services that they deliver, and at the same time, through the integrations and everything else, lower their labor costs. Mm. And so, you know, for us, we look at that as a competitive advantage. For us, a huge opportunity in a market like this. But we think it's a huge opportunity for the customers we service as well, mm-hmm. To look at that. I think if you're looking at your business over the next 6 months to 2-3 years, I think positioning yourself really well for what your end customers are going to care about in that regard can put you in a great place to just get a tremendous amount of market share and really excel through it.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been an enlightening and fun conversation. Hope you enjoyed it.
No, it was fun, and I definitely appreciate the invite and the opportunity.
Awesome. Hi, it's Alan again. Marketing Today was created and produced by me with post-production support from Sam Robertson. If you're new to Marketing Today, please feel free to write us a review on iTunes or your favorite listening platform. Don't forget to subscribe on marketingtodaypodcast.com. Tell your friends and colleagues about the show. I love hearing from listeners. You can contact me at marketingtodaypodcast.com. There you'll also find complete show notes and links to what was discussed in the episode today, and you can search our archives. I'm Alan Hart, and this is Marketing Today.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Hall, host of Sustainable Futures, Kantar's regular look at the intersection between brands, consumers, and sustainability. I want to help you to get your brand ready for the future, understand where you can make an impact, and make a smarter business case for products and services that are better for people, the planet, and for business. Sustainable Futures will showcase what great sustainable marketing looks like and the issues that matter to consumers across the globe. Subscribe to Sustainable Futures from Kantar, wherever you get your podcasts.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.